Blog Talk Radio.
And Cabrera drives one to center field. Borges is on the move, still going back. Track ball, and it's gone! It is gone! Miguel Cabrera hits number 400!
Here for the Detroit Sports Show. Welcome back. Another Monday in the books here, and Miguel Cabrera, the big story around town over the weekend, hitting number 400, his 400th home run of his career. incredible athlete in Detroit sports history. That's what we're here to debate, exactly where he belongs in that history, where he belongs in Tigers history, and what's ahead of him as his career continues. I'm your host tonight, Chris Burke. You can get me at ChrisBurke_SI. You can also get our site, Detroit Sports Site, as well as this podcast at D-Town Sports Site. Joined by, for now, one of our two other co-hosts, Andrew Tomlinson, the president of the Hernan Perez Fan Club. You can get him at Drew_Tomlinson. How's it going, Andrew?
That is just a flat lie. I'm the president of the Kellen Moore Fan Club. I don't want anything to do with Hernan Perez.
It's the same thing. It's the same. He's the Tigers' Kellen Moore.
At least Kellen Moore does stuff in the preseason. Did Hernan Perez do anything in spring trading?
He's Kellen Moore if they brought Kellen Moore in only for two-minute drills in close games.
Not to derail us too early, but I really think the Marlins missed on a great opportunity to have Don Kelly as a player coach down in Miami.
Sure.
Come on.
I mean,
Pro's a legend. He's already played every position.
It's as good an option as a general manager moving down to managing. Isn't that what they did?
Also true. That is what they did. But, hey, at least now the GM who put the team together has to figure out how to make them win.
DK. I think DK's on the disabled list these days.
DK's on the DL.
Although, would you rather Don Kelly or Hernan Perez? Which one would you rather have on the roster?
Oh, Don Kelly by far. At least Don Kelly
right?
hits
it's
like 210.
It's not even close, right?
No.
He's a lefty, too. That's so sad. That's such a sad statement on Hernan Perez.
Just Don imagine Kelly if they kept Steve Lombardozzi.
They should have. I mean, well, whatever. Anyway, we're here to talk about Miguel. We're talking about anti-Miguel Cabrera right now.
Yeah.
We're about as far away from Miguel Cabrera as we could possibly be with Hernan Perez. Max DeMara will be joining us, I believe, at some point tonight. He can hop in the conversation once he gets here. As I said, just trying to figure out exactly where we are with Miguel Cabrera in his career. Now 400 home runs, no sign of slowing down anytime soon. That's just an incredible number for where he is in his career and how many years he should still have ahead of him. I remember a few years ago, the early 2000s, after the Tigers went through their sort of dead period where they weren't competitive at all. I was out at Comerica Park watching a game with my dad, and I think the Tigers lost this game, but Pudge Rodriguez led off the ninth inning with he reached out and somehow got to a pitch that was outside the strike zone, poked it into the corner for a double, and I said something like, he might be the best player I've ever seen on the Tigers in my lifetime. And I think I probably jumped the gun on that. I mean, it's fair to say Miguel Cabrera is the best Tiger since – where would you draw the cutoff line? I mean, is he the best Tiger ever?
Yes. I 100% believe that Miguel Cabrera is the best Tiger ever.
Done. Conversation over. Not the best Tiger ever if he wins a championship or if he gets to 500. It's the conversation's done.
I mean, he won a triple crown in a period of baseball where it's pretty much unheard of to win every category, not only just based off of the caliber of pitching across baseball, but also the caliber of player you're competing against. I think when Yastrzemski won it, there wasn't the parity across baseball of where players went across the whole range of NL, AL, everything in terms of talent. I mean, you look at baseball today, and there are 5, 6, 7 players in the running for best currently in the game, and Miguel Cabrera managed to win the Triple Crown and then come back and almost do it again. I think he's one man that has led this team through some pretty horrendous years. I just don't – I think the Ty Cobb is the one that I think everyone's going to go to say and try to put them together and say who's better. But Ty Cobb was more well-known for his mean streak almost than it was for his playing ability. I mean, he hit for high average and certainly did a lot. But I think Cabrera has done more to show – I just think – I don't even know how to put it into words how amazing it was or has been to watch him play. I mean, do you disagree whether or not he's the best Tiger ever?
I definitely understand the argument. I think he's top two. It's hard for me. You said Cobb. That's really the argument. Is it Ty Cobb or is it Miguel Cabrera? And it's Ty Cobb played. He retired, you know, whatever it was now, 80 some years ago. So you know, it's tough to make those comparisons. It's sort of similar to when you're comparing. Almost the same as comparing Iserman to Gordie Howe. It's just the game was so much different. You know, Howe was playing in the 16, 18 league. Ty Cobb was playing in, you know, smaller league, different game, but
with a flat mound.
But 366 career average, almost 900 stolen bases. He had 117 home runs in an era when nobody really hit home runs. More than 4,000 career hits. He batted 400 twice, or three times. He batted 400 three times. No matter how you really stack it up, he's one of the greatest baseball players of all time. And the Tigers won a ton when Ty Cobb was there. So for me, it's tough to compare those two because I don't really know how you even would begin to go about it.
I think Ty Cobb was an amazing player, and I don't disagree with the fact that he certainly warrants a place in Tigers history as the number – I would put him in the top three. And maybe I just don't have the respect for baseball history of other people do. I've even said it on the show. I was not
I don't think
a big baseball guy until – yeah, well, until 2006, I wasn't a huge baseball guy. But I just – I think
well,
Ty Cobb
throw one more.
The game was different. Like, at least when Iserman and Howe played, they both played hockey at the same time. Granted, Gordie Howe
sure.
was old. But the game was so different in the early 1900s. I mean, 1928, did they even have – I don't even think they had the mound yet. I still think it was flat grass that they were throwing off of. I mean, that's very different.
Well, let me – okay, so – I guess the other name that you would probably have to throw – I mean, I think it's Cobb and Cabrera.
Bobby
but
Higgins.
The other name that – clearly, it's either Bobby Higginson or Hernan Perez. I mean, I think you have to mention – oh, jeez. The Lobster just gave up a 500-foot home run.
I'm still behind.
anyway, sorry, breaking news. Carlos Gomez is chirping at Miguel Cabrera. Anyway – the other guy that you have to put in the mix, I think, is Al Kaline. If you want to talk about greatest Tigers. And I said Pudge Rodriguez, I think, is up there for me. Alan Trammell, certainly. I grew up watching him. Hank Greenberg. I didn't grow up watching Hank Greenberg, but Hank Greenberg, I think, is probably in discussion. But Al Kaline's the other one that I think if you're going to talk about the best players in Tiger history, won a World Series, 3,000 hits, 399 home runs. I mean, I think he's
played
in there.
Forever.
Great, great defender. I think that he was sort of a franchise-changing talent, like Pudge was, like Ty Cobb was, like Cabrera has been. So that's the other one. But I still think I have Cobb first, Cabrera second. But I don't know how much longer I can hold on that. I think Cabrera, when he's all said and done, might be one of the best. I mean, we might be talking about him as one of the best hitters ever, right? Like top 10, 15 hitters of all time when all said and done.
I think we're – I don't see how he's already not in the conversation.
Yeah.
I think we are. I mean, obviously this is all – and I hate to bring this up, but it's got to be brought up. It all sort of hinges on performance-enhancing drugs. I'm not above saying if it came out in 5 years that Miggy's been juicing, I wouldn't be shocked because I think everybody does at this point. Just because it makes it hurt less.
Just dropping that casually in there.
But if he plays, I mean, if you got to say he's probably the best clean hitter you're looking at since Hank Aaron, honestly. I mean, who would pale in comparison to him? He's going to most likely break, which in my opinion is the one that's important, the Hank Aaron home run record. I don't see how he doesn't. And just the way he swings and the way he hits, I just don't see how he doesn't do it. He's going to play for a long time. Other than the last 2 years, wow, he's been relatively injury-free, and that would put you down as the, if not greatest, the second greatest right-handed hitter ever. I mean, maybe the second greatest hitter ever, only to maybe Ted Williams.
To be fair, he needs 355 more home runs to catch Hank Aaron. So
he's
I don't know
32.
That it's, I don't know. I mean, I think it's doable, but that's 10 more years at 35 home runs. So you're still talking about a long way to go. I mean, I assume at some point he moves to being just a DH and then can play there for a long time. But, probably is the best clean, I mean, hopefully clean hitter since Hank Aaron. I don't even know. Maybe Ken Griffey's in that discussion.
You just hope he doesn't trail off like
Griffey. I mean, it was Jim Thome was never got popped for PEDs.
So.
He had 600 some home runs. So I guess those, Pujols? I don't know.
Even
Pujols
has fallen so far off a cliff.
Yeah.
I mean.
All right. So we've got Cabrera, top two all time in Tigers history, locked in. So who else is in this discussion for best Detroit? I mean, if we're talking about the greatest Detroit athlete ever, before we get into that, how important is it if Cabrera is going to be mentioned as one of the greatest Detroit athletes ever, that he wins a World Series with the Tigers?
I don't think important, personally. I mean, you can't look at what a team has done. I mean, if you think about those first years with Cabrera, those teams were terrible. I mean, especially the first year that he was here, when you had Edgar Renteria and Jock Jones. That was an awful team.
Oh, man.
So I don't
forgot
know
about
if you
Jack
can...
Jones?
Never forget. So I don't
Rondell
know.
White.
I mean, I don't know about... I mean, where would you put Barry Sanders then? I mean, he certainly never led the Lions to the promised land.
Yeah, I mean, that's the clear comparison, unless you want to go into some of the, like, random Pistons, like Dave Bing, which I think is probably outside of your strike zone for Pistons discussion.
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, I think, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's hurt Sanders' legacy as an NFL player that he played. I mean, I think in some ways it's helped Barry Sanders' legacy that he was that great on such a terrible franchise for so long. I mean, they had some playoff teams, but certainly they were not really just they won the one playoff game. They were never really a Super Bowl contender per se while he was around. So I don't think it's hurt him, but that's sort of why I think it's different than the Cabrera discussion, because I mean, I think you could argue that they should have won a World Series by now. So if he leaves Detroit, you know, whenever it happens to be, and the contract runs through, I don't even remember now, like 3050. If he doesn't win, I think people are going to try and hold it against him, especially if you're stacking him up against Kaline and Cobb. I mean, if you're talking about greatest Tiger of all time, I don't know if you can put a guy on there that didn't win the World Series. I mean, you can put him on there, but I don't know if he can be your number one guy. I think it's going to be an argument against him if he doesn't win a World Series.
I think the only reason I had that tough is you've got the two MVPs. I mean, I think Cobb only won one. You have a triple crown, which I don't think either of them won. Cobb might have, but I don't remember. So, I mean, that's tough. It's really tough to look at because if you look across other cities with other sports, there are, you know, you start looking at guys like Dan Marino, right, who's going to be considered one of the best. And he never won a Super Bowl. So,
but that's how people talk about him. And Jim Kelly, I mean, one of the – he's probably – Dan Marino's probably maybe outside of Barry Sanders. I think they're probably leading that discussion in the NFL. That's sort of always the qualifier for Dan Marino. He was the greatest quarterback who never won a Super Bowl.
So say Cabrera –
and I don't know that they'll – but Cabrera's won a World Series is the other thing.
Yeah, well, he's won two, hasn't he? I think he just won one.
So I think the discussion is different for Cabrera's. I think his, I don't know. Maybe it's not different. Maybe it doesn't matter at all if his Detroit legacy. Because I think having a couple or having the World Series in his back pocket sort of locks up his all-time legacy. But I don't know. I feel if he doesn't win one here, that will always be. He was one of the greatest Tigers, but
one of the greatest Tigers to never win a World Series.
He is the greatest Tiger to never win a World Series at the moment.
So I mean, I guess go to his teammate. I mean, where would you rank
to never win a World
Justin
Series
Verlander then? I mean, in terms of I mean, I don't think it's fair to compare pitchers and hitters, but where would you put him in terms of pitchers in the organization? I mean, he's got to be top three. I know he hasn't been great the last couple of years, but MVP, Cy Young. Yeah, he's got to be up there. He's never won one. I mean, it's not like the Tigers boast a long history of fantastic pitching either.
I mean, there's guys in there, though.
Sure. But I guess my problem is that baseball is, of all sports, you know, because the one thing you could always say about Dan Marino is, okay, well, he ran the show, right? You're the quarterback. You run the show. You are the most important player in the field. When it comes to baseball, you're only batting 3-4 times a game, and if you're on base every time and you make your defensive plays, it doesn't really matter. You might, you know, have 5 RBIs and lose 6-5.
Verlander's currently 8th all-time on the Tigers for career wins, which I know – people kind of shoot down wins, but that's where I'll start, just across eras. And I'm trying to figure out who, I mean, it's going to take more research than I have available, but some of the guys that are also on there, like he's right behind, he's 9 behind Dizzy Trout, who never won a World Series in Detroit, but won 4, it looks like 4 MVPs. So, I mean, like, maybe he did win. Never mind. He did. I guess he did win the World Series. So maybe Verlander is the highest guy without a World Series win. Anyway. But again, I still think that's if you have a great player that doesn't win a championship. And again, it's different, a little different for Cabrera because he has won a championship. I think the conversation there is different for Cabrera than it is. I think it's different for Cabrera if we're talking greatest Tiger ever than greatest Major League Baseball player ever. And again, maybe it's not. Maybe it doesn't matter because he's that good, because he's that incredible hitter. We don't even have to consider where he stands with, you know, the team history.
I think the hard thing, too, to differentiate is Cabrera's always going to be the face of what brought baseball back to Detroit. I know Pudge sort of did it. And they got to the
Detroit. Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably Pudge.
Sort of. And then they sort of dropped off. But, I mean, once they got Cabrera, I mean, it's been sustained, you know, 3 million fan seasons. I know last year they didn't get it, but the weather was awful at the beginning of the season. I would consider Cabrera the face of what brought baseball sort of back. I think Pudge started it, and then Manglio continued it, and then Cabrera sort of completed the comeback and created what is now the baseball city again that is Detroit. I don't know.
Agree with that. I mean, I think Verlander's in that discussion too.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Verlander arguably is more, has been a, more of a face of the franchise than any of those guys during this revival.
Yes.
I mean, anyway, that's another discussion and where we were headed. But where I wanted to go from there before we switch gears to other sports, if we're saying Cobb and Cabrera top two in Detroit Tigers history, who else is in the top five across all sports for the city of Detroit? Is it just as simple as Cobb, Cabrera, Gordie Howe, Barry Sanders, Steve Yzerman? Is that the top five?
Oh, I don't even think so. I think it's tough to even say you're not including Nick Lidstrom in that, who played forever and arguably.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't argue with the success. I mean, he's got to be up there. He played in a much tougher time to play hockey than I would argue Steve Yzerman or Gordie Howe played in. When he entered into the 2000s, when the size and speed of the game changed. But you're also not even mentioning Bobby Lane, who is probably the most successful Detroit football player ever. I mean, I know that's going way back there, but, I mean, he was pretty good when he was with the Lions in the pre-Super Bowl era.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, yeah, I think that's – I don't know that there would be any – feel like we should mention at least the Pistons. I don't know if there'd be any. I guess Joe Dumars is probably up there. If you're talking about top 20 or 30 Detroit athletes, Joe Dumars is probably on the list. But top
Chauncey
five. I guess Isaiah Thomas probably has the argument. Hall of Famer, two championships, if not for Magic Johnson. Larry Bird, he was right up there as one of the best point guards of all time. And in that era, if not for those guys, we would have been talking about him a lot. People would have talked about him a lot more. I don't think he's top five in Detroit history, but he would probably be the number one. Wherever the number one Piston would land on that list, you'd probably have Isaiah Thomas.
I mean, he's got the moment,
or Kentavious
too. I mean,
either way.
KCP. I think.
Singler? That's your fan club right there. Kyle
Well,
Singler,
not anymore. He's not here anymore.
I mean, you can still cheer for him.
I know. What is Mike Posner, the white rapper from Detroit, going to do? He loved him because he went to Duke.
All right, Bobby Lane. Bobby Lane, Lidstrom, would you bump any – of those five names I mentioned, which was just for the refresher, was Cabrera, Cobb, Yzerman, Howe, Sanders – Which one would be closest to falling off that list, or which one would you bump for Lane, Lidstrom? I guess you could make Kaline. I guess you could make the argument for Kaline or maybe Ted Lindsay, Sawchuk, one of those other old school wings.
I guess Sawchuk would be there too.
I guess let me get that answer from you first. Who would be number five for you out of those five guys that I named, or do you have a different top five?
No, I think Cabrera, Yzerman, I gotta be up there. I think Calvin, if he ever wins a Super Bowl, would be in there. Honestly, I think if they win a Super Bowl, and I've said this before, I think he will go down as the greatest Tiger ever, or Tiger, but greatest Lion ever.
They might name him the greatest Tiger ever if they win the Super Bowl.
That's true. But I think Yzerman, Sanders, Cabrera is three. And the two that I really struggle with, again, I hate to harp on it being a different era, but baseball was just so different back then. And so while Cobb might have been great in his era, I don't know where he stacks up all time. And this is going to be a little blasphemous, but Gordie Howe's in the bottom only because and this is stupid, but he didn't play his whole career in Detroit. So it's he's sort of a shared asset. Yeah. I mean, neither did Cabrera, but you could argue, I don't know. I think I give penance to more weight to players that played their whole career in one area.
I think Gordie Howe might be number one on the list.
He's probably the best player.
I think he's probably the greatest. Yeah, I think he's the best player. And even though he didn't – I mean, at some point you have to give him a pass. He played for four decades.
And had a great one-game
four
stand
Stanley
with the Detroit
Cup.
Vipers.
Yeah. Four Stanley Cups. I mean, broke tons and tons of – I mean, held a million records until, you know, Gretzky came along.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for me, if I was ranking one through five, it would probably be
ranking of that hard.
I would probably have Howe, Cobb. Mine would probably be Howe, Cobb, Sanders, Iserman, someone. Cabrera, I guess. I mean, I'm still hesitant to put Cabrera in there, but I guess he would be my five, right? Maybe. I still might. Oh, man. I guess Cabrera. We already locked him in over K-Line, so I guess Cabrera.
I think my ranking would be Howe, Cabrera, Sanders, Iserman, Cobb. It's tough. I mean, this
maybe
is hard
maybe
to
the
do
top
very
five
Sanders.
Is that obvious.
I mean, yeah, I don't.
Because I think Barry Sanders is the greatest Lion of all time. I don't think you can give that to Bobby Lane over him.
No, I don't disagree. My question is, where does Sanders go in the top five? Because Sanders didn't play as long. I mean, when you look at Gordie Plow, he played forever. I mean, same with, Cabrera's played for a very long time. Sanders didn't really play for the Lions that long. And he did sort of screw
him
over.
Right. The way he left, I think, probably hurt his legacy a little bit in Detroit. Not only because of how he left, but also because they still, I mean, up until like 3 years ago, had not recovered from him leaving.
Yeah.
He blindsided them. They couldn't find a running back forever. They were terrible. It just sort of all spiraled after that.
He didn't want anything to do with the Lions. He didn't want to be associated with them. He didn't show up to team functions. They'd invite him. I remember they invited him to the unveiling of the Lions Hall of Fame or whatever. And he didn't even show up. He gave a video message. So it's hard to say you're one of the five greatest ever when you don't even really want to be associated. He's been better the last few years.
But I think that's
he hated that team.
For me, that's a different argument, though. I mean, if you're looking just at and I guess I'm sort of double talking because of what I said about Cabrera and the championship, but if you're just looking at the player himself.
True.
I think Barry Sanders is a top three running back all time.
Yeah,
in the NFL. I mean, I think he's top three. So I think you have to keep him up there.
Thinking about this, where do you put Herman Moore? We haven't even discussed him. He was pretty good.
He was pretty good. That's where I'd put him. He was pretty good.
I mean, he broke the single season, a receiving record?
I wouldn't put him above Calvin Johnson.
I wouldn't put him above Calvin Johnson either, but, I mean, he's top 10. He played a lot longer than Barry.
Top 10 for the Lions or top 10 all-time in Detroit?
Top 10. I think he'd be, like, 9 or 10 all-time.
Oh, no
he's
way.
There. He's
no
there.
Way. No way.
Present.
You're forgetting. I mean, I think, and, again, it's tough to go back across eras, but the Lions' glory days were the, 50s.
Yeah,
no,
that's true.
If you're going back there and talking about Bobby Lane, then you
I guess
really got
to
go through.
Has to be in there. Yeah, okay. I retract the statement.
You
got to
go like Charlie Sanders, and Charlie Sanders was later than that, but like Joe Schmidt.
Night Train.
I mean, Alex Karras was in the 60s. Yeah, Night Train.
I take it back.
I mean,
I take it back.
I think Herman Moore is pretty close on there. Yeah, I think we covered most of the guys that you'd consider. Maybe one or two more random Tigers, Charlie Gehringer or something like that. But Lidstrom's an interesting one for me because I think there's an argument to be made that he is one of – I mean, he's two defensemen in the NHL, I think. You can almost count look at him the way people look at Barry Sanders amongst running backs. I think he was that good. I think he was that type of talent that, well, maybe he didn't get as much respect because he didn't play a flashy game. He wasn't super boisterous or anything like that. But I think when people look back on his career, it might take a few more years to kind of get there, but I think when people look back on his career, he's got to be the one of the top handful of defensemen ever, right? Or am I just overhyping him because he's from here?
No, I mean, some people think he could still play. I mean, a lot of people think he's – I mean, he's definitely the greatest foreign-born defenseman ever.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a really discussion. So, I mean, it was him, and now the name's escaping me, and it should be because I just watched the documentary on him. But the Russian also played for the Red Wings. This is bad, but I can't remember him. Anyway, I think Lindstrom's definitely the best.
Fetisov?
Yes.
Konstantinov?
Yes.
Those were the two Russian
defensemen. Fetisov is, it's like him and Lindstrom are the greatest foreign-born defensemen to ever play in the NHL. It's like 1-2 with those two. But Lindstrom's tough. I mean, he did win. I mean, he won, what, 4 Stanley Cups, made it to 6 finals?
Yeah. I mean, that's –
won 8 million Norris trophies.
That's an interesting one. I don't know that he'd be up there, but I think he's probably I don't know. I don't know that you'd include him there, but he's an interesting one for me. So anyway, I guess we got our 5. I mean, the wild card, if we really want to go into wild cards, the wild card for Detroit athletes is probably Joe Louis, but I don't know that we want to go down there. That's opening
true,
up.
And you have several great college players, too, to look at.
That's opening up another.
Several Michigan and Michigan State players.
Another
that could go
element here. So
in this conversation. For
professional team boards.
Yeah. No, I'd agree.
All right. Well, fair enough. I guess we got our 5. Wait, I got to do. If we're going to switch topics here, and you specifically asked for this, so. Babs Watch. Babs Watch time.
I know. I'm so excited. So excited.
You gotta go. I was going to roll the whole whole theme song for Baywatch, but it's like 2.5 minutes long. And you can't really appreciate it without the video either. The video was the whole – what was happening while the music was playing was really the whole reason to watch the credits in the first place. So
I'm super disappointed no one has gifted his head onto a body in the Baywatch opening and made that just goes around.
Well, you can still get on it. We got at least another day or two, it sounds like.
It's that. I heard he's meeting. Well, we'll get into that.
Yeah, so the developments are, at least unless I've missed something since we started a half hour ago, Babcock and Holland, Ken Holland, are scheduled to meet Tuesday to talk. I assume at that point Babcock will either give him a decision, tell him what he's doing, or tell him what his other offers are and see if the Wings want to match. The Buffalo Sabres report from the Buffalo News today, Monday, that the Sabres, quote, feel they've done everything they can to lure Mike Babcock to Buffalo. And, what else, you know, whether that – I guess that's the offer they made him, you know, how hard they've gone after him with their pitch. And then the third piece was that Babcock reached out to the San Jose Sharks about their opening. Todd McClellan was the coach there, which I think is pretty interesting in itself, that Babcock reportedly contacted them and sort of leads into an old piece you brought up before we came on the air, which was Drew Sharp. You probably won't hear me plug Drew Sharp all that much on here, but Drew Sharp saying that Babcock didn't get as much of a market as he thought he was going to get. So all interesting, or I mean, we're coming to the end of the road if you believe Babcock's word that he's going to announce by Wednesday. So what's your gut feeling at this point?
I think he's back. Honestly, I really do. I mean, right, the three destinations everyone talked about were Edmonton, Buffalo, and Philly. Because you had Claude Giroux and a somewhat young core in Philadelphia, and they just hired North Dakota's head coach. You had Edmonton that was getting Connor McDavid, and so for some reason, everyone thought Babcock wanted to go coach Connor McDavid, but I don't know why he'd want to coach a kid he's never ever, I'd assume, talked to. And then the Sabres, because they have a young core and he has a good relationship with their GM, I don't really see Babcock wanting to go be a Sabre because they're probably 4 years away from being remotely relevant. And the other one that got thrown into the mix today was St. Louis, but the rumor out there is that St. Louis wouldn't be able to pay the $5 million price tag that Babcock wants. And it does seem like he feels some sort of weight of understanding that he is going to set the bar for coaches moving forward, sort of like the Max Scherzer deal, which maybe that's just an excuse to get more money. But Babcock seems to understand that he needs to maximize his earning potential so that the next great coach can also move into that area.
Agreed.
St. Louis would be the best. I think St. Louis is the spot he would go to, is the most likely to go to. I mean, you have Petrangelo, who is used to coaching. David Backes is a nice guy. TJ Oshie. They have a young goalie in Jake Allen. That would be the spot I would think he would go, but I don't. If they can't pay him, I don't see him going.
Yeah, I mean, St. Louis to me is the one that stands out as, I guess depending on where you see the Red Wings for the next couple of years, as the team that's closest of his options to being able to compete for a championship. They've been close the last few years. I mean, they still have a coach at the moment, first of all.
That's the other thing.
X factor here. They still have Ken Hitchcock there, but they haven't been able to get over the top, and they've been close. They've been extremely competitive in a tough conference and just haven't been able to get by, you know, the first, second round. So the talent's there for them to be a contender. You know, San Jose missed the playoffs this year. You mentioned Buffalo's rebuilding. Toronto.
I still
feel like Toronto's just sort of lurking out there. People have kind of written them off because it's such a terrible – the franchise has been in such shambles of late, but it's still Toronto, and it's still – like if you're a Canadian-born hockey coach, that's kind of the mecca still. So I don't know that that one's 100% as out of the mix as people seem to think, but I understand why people have written that one off. Buffalo to me – Buffalo I could see. I think it's the wing. I really think it's the Wings or Buffalo, and I'm not sure which one. But I really think those are. If he goes anywhere other than those two, I'll be really surprised. Which doesn't, you know, not coming from any insider information or anything. I just would be shocked if he were to choose the San Jose situation, or St. Louis and less money, or the Toronto, Toronto situation over one of those two teams.
I think. Here's the thing that, and so I read this too. I just want to make sure that people don't think I'm coming out of this out of my own head. But if he's concerned about an aging core in Detroit, why on earth would he go to San Jose, who was not only 24th, according to Hockey Futures, heading into the 2014-15 season in prospect rankings, but is also super old with a team that doesn't seem to want to win and no goaltender? So I don't quite get that. And the same goes for Toronto. I'm trying to find out where they are in the rankings. They're way down there. They're like, this is bad radio that I don't have this, but they're 19th overall in prospect rankings. St. Louis is 17. Meanwhile, you have Buffalo at 1, and they're going to get Jack Eichel, who's a pretty good hockey player, and the Wings at 4. So, and the Wings are probably going to go up with the way Polkinen played, Dylan Larkin's playing. So, if you're Babcock and he's true to everything he said about wanting to find a team that can, that is close to winning and close to being able to reload and make a run and win, it's really the Wings. I mean, Buffalo is still 4 or 5 years away from realizing their prospect ranking. All these other teams have nothing. And if it's Toronto, they're looking at a total teardown. I mean, they're talking about giving players away to get salaries off the books.
Well, I guess the argument for Buffalo is what you mentioned, the young core. And people are reading into those comments Babcock made after the Wings were eliminated about how they've been too good and how they haven't been able to draft replacements for Zetterberg and Datsyuk and all these young guys, or all these veterans. What?
They're still fourth in the prospect ranking. That's what I don't understand.
No, I mean, I'm not arguing it. I'm just saying that that comment, I think, of all the comments Mike Babcock has made since the Red Wings season ended, that was the one that people have run with as indication that he's leaving, that he doesn't think they can win again with Datsyuk and Zetterberg here, and he doesn't think they have enough to win once those guys are gone. And I don't know that I buy that. I think he was just making – I honestly think he was sort of backhand complimenting the Lightning. It was the same thing as when the Penguins beat him in the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, that's how Pittsburgh got good. That franchise was horrible. They were almost going to move that franchise, and then they drafted Crosby, Malkin, and Fleury. And
drafted
they
and
were,
given.
Right. Well, you know, however it happened. And then suddenly they were this great team, and I think it was sort of the same thing. I think he was more trying to explain what had happened with Tampa Bay and why the Wings had sort of stalled out the last few years than anything. I didn't necessarily read into that like he's going somewhere with a young core, but I can see the appeal from Buffalo. I think if you were to pick a U.S. city with a hockey mentality closest to Toronto or closest to one of the Canadian cities, it'd be Buffalo.
Closest to Detroit.
I mean, I think the Buffalo hockey fan base is as rabid as any when that team is good.
Yes, they're rabid even when they're not. They still practice.
Right, and as knowledgeable. I mean, I think that's a fan base that's just dying to be good again. And so you get the sort of, you get that allure of being the guy who can turn that franchise around and, step in and be the hero. So I can see the appeal there. They're good. They have a lot of good young talent. I do wonder I wonder if the lottery swayed him one way or another, because Jack Eichel is a great player and probably will be a very good pro, but Connor McDavid looks like the next NHL superstar. I don't know if Eichel is on that same level.
Well, McDavid's the total package. I've listened to him interviewed a lot during the junior season, and he's great with the media. He's personable. You know, he's not a bad-looking fellow. He plays really well. I mean, he's the total package. He's what Sidney Crosby wasn't.
The attractiveness quotient.
Well, I mean, Sidney Crosby was terrible with the media. He was boring. He looks a little bit like an elf. He was never able to be marketed across the league like they wanted to. I that goes into it, I think, in marketing with the team and whatnot. I mean, ESPN couldn't stop talking about Mike Matheny and Brad Ausmus last night. But I think that the lottery did it. And I think this playoff loss, I find it interesting how just heartbroken Babs was. I mean, when I think of heartbreaking series, that one isn't that high on the list for me. I mean, it's like four in the last five. I mean, I would rank the come back from 3-1 against San Jose to lose in 7 up there when I think they led that game. The same goes for Chicago.
The Chicago one is the worst one for me.
The Chicago one is number one. For
by
sure.
A lot. That one's
because I'm still not convinced this year they wouldn't have gotten steamrolled by Carey Price and the Canadiens. I think Babb is trying to raise his price. I really do. I think that's why there's this sudden meeting with Tuesday. I think he's staying, and I think he's just trying to get the most money and say, this is what they've offered me. This is what I want. Because that's what I think this whole thing was an exercise in figuring out what Babb's market was.
And that'll be interesting if the Wings – I mean, I assume the Wings will pay what he asks for, but I'm not positive.
So here's the other thing.
If he says, I have $5 million, I have $4.5 million on the table from Buffalo, and I'm going to take it unless you beat it.
Well,
I don't know if
they'll
beat it.
Let's say they say six, because that's what thrown out.
All right, whatever the number is. There, I think one of these teams is probably going to be willing to jump over what we think the Red Wings are willing to offer him right now. So that is I don't know that this boils down to – he said it doesn't boil down to just money for him. I understand what you're saying about wanting to sort of reset the market for NHL coaches. I think he's going to do that regardless. So I don't know that Buffalo offering him 6 and Detroit offering him 5 would sway him towards Buffalo if you think Detroit's got a better nucleus in place and his family wants to be in Detroit and all those things. So, but I don't know. I seem to change my opinion on it day to day, and I certainly am not buying any of the every report. I sort of meet with a skeptical eye because I don't really know that anyone has a good feel for what's happening.
I know TSN and Sportsnet and all them are really sad that this is ending now because the free agent market's pretty barren. So they were sort of hoping this would, I think, drag out into the new league year. Like the Wings would negotiate, and they wouldn't get there. And then it would drag into July, which obviously it didn't. I think it's a little strange that Babcock is doing interviews with Ken Holland in the room saying we're going to make a decision by next Friday. I mean, that to me makes it think that this is really just an exercise. And I mean, my question would be what if Babcock walks to the meeting Tuesday to Ken Holland and says, all right, I want this guy, this guy, this guy gone. I want Weiss, Kindle, and Smith off my team. And I need Polkinen, I need Ouellette, and I need Marchenko on it. I mean, or I need Mike Green or something, and Mrazek's the starter. Do you think Ken Holland says that?
I mean, whether Babcock is the coach or not, I hope Ken Holland says yes to that because I think all those moves make the team better.
He didn't do that at the beginning of the year. Babs wanted Ouellette, and Ken Holland said no.
Yeah. I mean, and that's been Ken Holland's MO since, and Babcock's really bought into it. We've talked about it before. They overseason these prospects. They leave them in the minors till they absolutely can't keep them in the minors anymore, and then they make a decision on them. And I think that they're starting to see – I think the last couple of years we've seen a little bit of a change there where they've started to see the value of pushing the kids along a little faster. And I think – maybe it's just wishful thinking, but I feel like the Dan Cleary contract – was the last one of that sort that we'll see where they just reward guys for the heck of rewarding them because they didn't play. I mean, Cleary was just eating money this year and a roster spot. And so they couldn't keep one of the young guys up. They're still committed to Johan Franzen for years and years. I mean, that's a tough situation because of his injury history, but you know, that's another bad contract. I think that's going to be the last one like that. So,
I think the problem they're having now.
More...
I think there's too many kids now. That's the problem.
I think that's the problem.
Their pipeline is too full. Like Martin Furk probably should be in Grand Rapids right now, but they don't have space for him. So we went down to the Walleye instead of sitting on a bench through the playoffs. So I really do think. I think Polkin is a lock, and then I think Anthony and Tisu, or however you say his name, and Mantha are really going to get a shot, and probably Tyler Bertuzzi, in my opinion, are going to get a real look at whether or not they're going to make the roster. I think one of the three of them do because they just don't have space to move these other players up, and they're seeing guys say, well, I'm just going to go back to Europe, and then
I think,
good luck to you.
Man, I can't see. I assume they keep Tyler Bertuzzi down there another year. I mean, I think Larkin will be interesting. Selfishly,
I hope he comes back
to Michigan because they need him. But
I think he does.
I think he's gone. No, I think he's leaving because I think he can get to the NHL next year. I think they saw at the World. I mean, he had some ups and downs at the World, which is to be expected. But I think he's capable.
The question is
when
he's playing, though.
No, that's right. Because that's what we're talking about. That's why it's interesting. That's why it's interesting to that Bab comment because I guess maybe the argument is that he doesn't think there's that world-class superstar, but the talent overall, they have enough of it that they probably can move some guys to upgrade the NHL-level talent, I think. I mean, I'm with you. I think Palkinen's up. At least one of the defensemen, probably two of the defensemen, Ouellette, they seem to like a lot. Marchenko, they seem to like a lot. Ryan Sproul still down there. So I think we're going to see even more than infusion of the youth, but I don't know.
They've got contracts to move. I think that's the hard part, right? When you look at what this team has, I think they could honestly field this Grand Rapids team with some of the kids from the Detroit team and Mrazek on the ice. And I think they would beat Sabres, Oilers, if they played them 10 times. I think they'd win at least three. I mean, they're pretty good talent-wise. I think it's just a question of do they get it in? I mean, you're looking at the next 5 years of having a top-flight prospect enter your roster every year if you have a roster spot open.
Babs is going to take the job, and then they're going to trade Jimmy Howard for Buffalo's second first-round pick.
Don't tell
I mean,
my
well,
heart
that's
because
sort of
my thought is that they could get two and move up. But
I didn't leave as much time for this as I wanted to, but we both mentioned Palkkanen now has 13 goals in two rounds in the AHL. The Griffins are into the conference finals. Some of those other Anthiasu, I think that's how you say it.
I don't know.
Like that.
Hey,
you mentioned him. You mentioned him too, but he's been playing well. Defense has been playing well. Thomas McCollum's been playing really well, which is sort of an interesting development for the Jimmy Howard, Peter Mrazek conversation. Did the Wings screw up their playoff roster? And that's mostly pertains to Palkkanen, because they were limited with the number of guys they could call up. But they had Palkkanen up. He played twice?
I think he played once. I think he played game two, and then they sent him back down.
And that was it. And they kept, you know, Yurko in the lineup, even though he was struggling so badly. Some of those other guys, I mean, should they have gone to even more youth in the playoffs and in the second half of the regular season?
Yurko's the one that I think they screwed up. I just was having this conversation with someone else, and I'm still not convinced Tomas Yurko is not more than a YouTube highlight. He can't score. He makes five great moves and then plays it right into the goalie.
The Damian Brunner special?
Pretty much, right? And then he gets one garbage goal, and then everyone on the blogosphere, people are going to hate me now, look at his advanced stats and think he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I mean, maybe he just needs to season more. I don't think Palkkanen is the one that they missed either. He didn't create space. His shot was a little – he needs to sort of compact a shot. I think he makes it next year. But, I mean, he scored at a ridiculous rate in the AHL and would come to the NHL. And he'd score a couple times and have some great looks, but he wouldn't score. And the number of times I'd watch him skate into the zone, wind up, and then have the pucks taken away from him probably outnumber the number of goals he had. So I don't know if they messed it up that way. I would look at a guy – like an Anthony Mantha, I would be curious to have seen him solely because of his size. Once Cole went down, I was sort of surprised we didn't see Mantha come up just to see if he couldn't play that down low, heavy, big body, dirty game that could just sort of put the puck in the net, not have to do a whole lot. Sort of what Ferraro was playing.
But they've also talked about how bad Mantha was this year, how disappointed in him they are. So I don't know that he was next up. But I
understand
what you're
saying. Would you have
changed? I mean, I would have played Palkkanen more. I would have kept him up, and I would have played even – I don't know. I mean, the power play was so bad. I wish Palkkanen had been better on the power play. That was the disappointing part.
Yes.
He just didn't help a whole lot on the power play. The slap shot from the dot when there's no traffic – you know, that's you're not going to do a whole lot with that in the NHL. So that's the disappointment for me. I wish they would have had him. I wish he would have been more productive on the power play. And I wish they would have had him on the power play. And then especially I wondered, too, if they regret not having him for Game 7 once Zdlicky was out of the lineup, because that was their other right-handed shot. I mean, Zdlicky was his own
awful
mess, but I don't know. I would have liked to see Palkkanen stay up, and especially it's definitely tough to watch. And it's great that he's having that AHL success, but it does leave it open for a little bit of a second guess, I think.
I think less Palkkanen and more on the defense, I would have liked to have seen Ouellette and Marchenko up maybe for a stretch run just to see. I mean, it came out that Biggie had an ankle, I think. He had an ankle injury, which hampered him. And he broke a toe, I think, playing soccer in the hallway. And he was pretty awful, heading into the playoffs, I would have liked to have seen what Marchenko and Ouellette could have done, especially when Smith found the press box for a long time. Obviously, he came back, but when he came back, Lickie was so bad. It would have been interesting to see Marchenko and Ouellette come in as the third pair. I think that could have been an interesting look at what they have. It certainly would have been a little bit more speed, a little bit more positioning. I think that's why I sort of think, could they have maybe prevented some of those Tyler Johnson goals if they'd been out there instead of, you know, Zidlicky or Quincy? I think that's where I look at it. On offense, they weren't sitting Yurko, and once they made that decision, really, who else were you going to put in the line? I mean, who else were you really going to take out?
Yeah. Well, just a couple minutes here, and I wanted to get into the topic you've been waiting to talk about.
Yes.
Which is the NBA draft lottery is this week. And the Pistons are, you know, crossing their fingers. They get this
yet
done.
Again in like the 8 to 10 range.
No, then they probably won't. They'll probably wind up sliding down somehow, thick. But Greg Monroe, free agent. They have some big decisions to make. Greg Monroe, the biggest of them. Have to figure out if they want to give him max contract, if he has any desire to come back, if they offer him that. The drafts are going to be in the top 10. I mean, looking at the guys that will be available, and I know you've scouted all of them extensively.
Every one of them. A lot of teams.
I mean, is this a playoff team next year? If they're in the, even if they don't get up in the, even if they don't bump up in the draft, can they get a good, a potential starter, do some work in free agency, and be in the playoffs next year?
No, I would say no right now, only because I think a lot of hinges on what happens with Brandon Jennings. We don't really know where he is in his rehab. When he was healthy, they were playing really good basketball. They were really good. They were fun to watch. They played good defense. They scored, moved the ball around. So I think he sort of hinted on it. I mean, I think they could find a starter. I think some people were really high on Willie Cauley-Stein, and whether or not he falls, I don't know. But he's the one that I would prefer them take. I'm still sort of waiting for that Andre Drummond breakout. I know he's played really, really well, but everyone used to say that Andre Drummond was going to be, you know, top two big man in the league. We haven't really seen that. So I think right now they're a no for me. Are you thinking the same thing? You want a Greg Monroe max,
no, think,
and then that's it?
I think they're going to let Monroe go, and I think they're going to make the playoffs next year.
Any one move that you think is going to push them into the playoffs? So it looks like Chris has actually fallen up with some technical difficulties. So we're gonna have to give you a little cliffhanger on why the one and mighty Chris Burke thinks that the Detroit Pistons are going to end up making the playoffs. Hopefully he'll let us know next week. So I think the question is, just to wrap up the show, what does Chris think is going to happen on the Detroit Pistons draft front? What are they going to do in free agency? And what does this letting of Greg Monroe go mean for the Pistons? Tune in, find out next week on our weekly reoccurring radio drama, The Detroit Sports Show.